A week into the Israeli bombing campaign of Gaza, 121 Palestinians have been killed by airstrikes and more than 800 injured. While a slew of rockets from Gaza are targeting Israeli areas, they're vastly outnumbered by Israeli drone strikes and bombing raids and pale in comparison to the power of Israeli bombs, part of what's being called Israel's Operation Pillar of Defense. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has shortened her trip to Asia to fly to Israel to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and also with Palestinian leaders in the West Bank. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has also arrived in Israel on Tuesday to help defuse the situation. He said immediate steps are needed by all to avoid a further escalation, including a ground operation, which will only result in further tragedy. About a quarter of the Palestinian fatalities so far are of children, despite Israel's assurances that its airstrikes are extremely targeted and precise. The Gaza Strip is one of the most densely populated areas on the planet, home to 1.7 million people. Monday's strikes were the deadliest yet, with an apartment building, a media center, and a sports stadium among the targets. Hamas leaders are also currently in Egypt, signaling a willingness to negotiate a ceasefire. However, Israeli political and media rhetoric has signaled a strong desire to continue the offensive. For example, writing in his column, Gilad Sharon, son of former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, said, "We need to flatten entire neighborhoods in Gaza, flatten all of Gaza. The Americans didn't stop with Hiroshima. The Japanese weren't surrendering fast enough, so they hit Nagasaki too. There should be no electricity in Gaza, no gasoline or moving vehicles. Nothing." End of quote. The timing of the bombing campaign has provoked questions of political efficacy coming right after the U.S. elections and a few months before Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces re-election. The last major bombing campaign in the late 2008, early 2009 era, dubbed Operation Cast Lead, had similar election-related timing and resulted in the killing of 1,400 Palestinian civilians in 22 days. My guest is Richard Falk. He is a professor emeritus of international law at Princeton University and an expert on the situation in Israel and Palestine. Welcome to Uprising, Richard.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, let's talk about the suspicious timing. I mentioned cast lead, but before that, there have been other Israeli incursions, and it seems every few years there's an attack, if not on Palestinian territories, on countries like Lebanon.
Yes, and it often does seem to be timed prior to Israeli elections, giving the impression that the Israeli public is disposed to give greater support to those leaders that show their willingness to attack the adversaries of Israel. So it creates this hyper-macho image of political expediency, that you kill innocent people in order to promote your own electoral future, which is a rather chilling message for a democracy to deliver to its own society, much less to the world.
Now, 4 years ago, when the last Gaza attacks happened that devastated Gaza and also included a ground invasion, which many fear may happen now, that, some said, was seen as a test of President Barack Obama, who had just been reelected. Do you think that that's the kind of thing that may be happening now as well, given that Obama just faced reelection? And right before the election, there were major tensions between Obama and Netanyahu. Netanyahu took the side of Mitt Romney, in fact, really put all his cards on the table for Mitt Romney.
Yes, it's extraordinary. See, my own sense was this gave President Obama a new opportunity to start a fresh path in relation to the conflict and to really try to find a diplomatic balance that would perhaps push Israel toward some kind of meaningful resolution of the conflict. And the fact that Netanyahu had so inappropriately tried to intervene in the American elections by clearly indicating his preference for Romney would seem to create that sense that there was a new opportunity for the second Obama presidential term. But instead, he's disappointed many of us by seeming to give a green light to Israel, no matter how defiant they are of international law and international morality, and even prudent foreign policy. The reports are that Hamas is now far stronger than prior to these latest attacks on the West Bank, and that the Palestinian Authority, the side that we had supported and which basically was at least alleged to be in a collaborationist mode with Israel, is much weakened. So just as we disappointed our own expectations in Afghanistan and Iraq, we are pursuing the same kind of diplomacy where you think that by devastating the adversary, you weaken it politically. But it has exactly the reverse effect in this post-colonial era of world history, where military superiority so rarely is capable of controlling political outcomes.
Now, the killing of Ahmed Jabari, the Hamas leader who had been part of the negotiations to return the Israeli prisoner Gilad Shalit, that killing sent a strong message to Hamas, didn't it? I mean, what sort of effect does it have when you do that kind of thing? Because it essentially tells future Hamas leaders, if you don't do anything, if you don't negotiate, we're going to bomb your people. If you do negotiate, we're going to bomb your people anyway, but we might also kill you.
Yes, exactly. And he, Al-Jabari, was in the midst of the negotiation of a ceasefire. And it had been arranged through the good offices of Cairo, but he had let it be known, he himself had let it be known, that Hamas was very interested in basically a permanent or long-term ceasefire. And it was at that moment that he is assassinated in a deliberately provocative act, because Israel knows from the past that if they do engage in this unlawful targeted killing of Hamas leaders, there will be a military reaction, and then they will react to the reaction, and the U.S. will play along with the Western media and call Israel defending itself.
Which is exactly what's
happened. It's a very Orwellian sequence.
Well, so you're saying that it's to Israel's advantage to not have any negotiated ceasefire with a group like Hamas, because that would sort of take away its reason for continuing the occupation, continuing the kind of oppression.
Well, it seems to me a kind of pathological bipolarity that on the one hand, of course, they don't want to have their society under attack, but on the other hand, they engage in provocative acts and avoid a real diplomatic alternative to this kind of violence. So one has to assume that there are other priorities in the thinking of their leaders, such as being successful in domestic elections, such as conveying to Iran an image of toughness, such as distracting attention from expanding the settlements on the West Bank, which is what they really care about, is the future of the West Bank and East Jerusalem. They're indifferent to what happens to Gaza. They would hope even that it splits from the rest of Palestine and that it is absorbed in some way by Egypt. So this is a very calculated but complex and confusing and contradictory policy that probably the people in Israel itself don't fully comprehend.
Well, in terms of what we're seeing the U.S. say, Hillary Clinton and Obama. Obama coming out very strongly on Israel's side, saying that it has a right to defend itself. Is there anything that Israel could do that wouldn't have the U.S. have its back? I mean, if Israel took Gilad Sharon's advice and flattened all of Gaza, would the U.S. then stand up and say, that's going too far?
Well, one would, of course, hope so. And it's a deep irony that suddenly Hiroshima and Nagasaki are invoked as positive precedents.
Right.
They are among the most atrocious acts in American political past, and to have them suddenly invoked as justifications for a murderous and genocidal approach to the relationship with Gaza is something that defies the moral and political imagination. I never thought I would live to hear someone invoking Hiroshima and Nagasaki as positive precedents, justifying present violence.
The Israeli firepower has been touted in the media as being so precise that even the fact that dozens of children are among the dead hasn't necessarily broken into most mainstream newspapers. Israeli military commentator Amos Harel said in Haaretz newspaper, the aerial firepower that Israel is employing is much more accurate and less destructive than that used in Israel's last major operation in Gaza. And that's the kind of quote that we're seeing popping up everywhere. This is very reminiscent of when the U.S. has gone to war and claimed that it uses smart bombs that somehow avoid civilians when they fall.
Well, of course, there's a double truth here. It is, in a technical sense, more precise. But when you bomb heavily populated urban settings, and when your targets include journalists and civilian infrastructure, naturally, you're going to kill lots of civilians. The truth is, they could kill thousands more if they wanted to use this firepower. So in one level, it's true they're not killing as many people as they could if they unleashed their full arsenal of weaponry. But at the same time, they are doing things that it is clear to anyone that it would result in the killing of women and children.
Well, finally, where do you see this heading? There was a ground invasion in 2009, but that was after Gaza had been reduced to rubble already, and there are imminent fears that this conflict may escalate into that as well. Tens of thousands of Israeli reservists have been put on notice. Could there be a ground invasion? And if so, what impact could that have on Gaza, which is, since the last 4 years, on top of the incursion and the 1,400 people killed, has suffered from the effects of a very severe blockade?
Yes, that has actually not enabled it even to recover physically, much less mentally and psychologically, from the 2008-2009 experience. But what I think is unclear is whether this massing on the border is a bluff or a threat. It's not. It's very hard to tell, because Israel's experience with ground invasions, Lebanon in 2006 and Cast Lead in 2008-09, both ended in political defeats, and it's one of the characteristics of the time we're living in that our leaders don't seem to have absorbed is that military superiority very rarely translates into political victory. And so if Israel were to launch such a inhumane and destructive ground attack on Gaza, it would again rather clearly invite a new political setback and probably strengthen Hamas in the West Bank and marginalize the Palestinian Authority in a manner that might even lead to its collapse.
Well, Richard Falk, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be your guest, Sonali.
Thank you. Richard Falk is a professor emeritus of international law at Princeton University. He's also the UN Special Rapporteur on the Palestinian territories. And we've been analyzing the political and historic context of the Israeli attack on Gaza. Tomorrow, we'll go live to Ramallah to speak with activist Huwaida Araf to give us an ongoing report of what's happening on the ground there.